back, and it is that time of the year. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the end of 2021, the year that has gone on forever, but has been so fast at the same time. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Josh.
And I'm Tom. And yes, we're back in the classic video podcast format for our last live show of the year and our last podcast episode of the year. And it's a big one, Josh. I'm really excited. What are we going to be discussing tonight?
Tonight's episode is the best games of 2021 and some of not 2021.
We're going to kick things off, our top five games of the past that we did a first time playthrough of in 2021. Then we're going to do some special awards that Josh and I have concocted. And then the top five each of our top five lists of the best games to release within the calendar year of 2020.
Correct. And if this is your first time seeing one of our Game of the Year shows or award ceremonies or whatever we do, me and Tom like to go back and forth, so we just don't unveil all five at one time for you guys. We like to do a kind of a drop down to see, you know, what's everyone's opinion on it and so on.
I did want to mention just up top, maybe this is a little bait for our listeners live. Make sure you stay tuned to the end of the episode, because anybody who knows us knows that when Josh and I do something on a special occasion, it usually marks something cool happening with the show, and we got something to talk about. So make sure you stay to the very end.
We got so many different things to talk about. And do you want to hit it off right now, Tom? Do we want to dive in to our best games of not 2021?
Yes, the best games of the past. So if you're passing the microphone to me, I would like to kick off mine with just an honorable mention before my top five, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so my honorable mention, a game that I played from the past that I didn't think deserved to be tip at the top, but you know, was pretty good, is actually my number one game of 2020. It is Animal Crossing New Horizons coming back into the top list because the release of version 2.0 and the Happy Island Paradise Designer, whatever it's properly called, DLC, man, it was such just like a jolt getting me right back into that world and the kind of just charming feel-good wholesomeness of it. And the DLC was not something hastily slapped together and just thrown out there. It's one of the meatiest, most in-depth, and you know, rewarding DLCs of its kind that I think has ever been released.
Not since Roller Coaster Tycoon Corkscrew Follies have we seen a DLC so big and so expansive.
The champ has been dethroned, yes. But for real, it was a delight. It was not enough of a delight to make it any higher on the list. And Josh officially ruled that DLCs cannot be considered a full-blown release. So Animal Crossing New Horizons gets my honorable mention for games from the past. Josh, do you have any honorable mentions to your top five?
So I do have an honorable mention, and it's one of those, it's like a weird gray area, because last year we talked about one of them, and I put it on my games of not 2020. And this year I'm going to do the same thing, but it's going to be an honorable mention. It is going to be Pac-Man 99. While the game did come out this year, it's just Pac-Man against other people, right? We've seen Pac-Man before. We've played Pac-Man before. This, I know they're probably in the chat sooner or later, but Hans Gruber's favorite game of this year. Hans Gruber can't get enough of that Pac-Man 99. And I will say I had so much fun. This is probably the game that I put the most time into on my Switch this year was Pac-Man 99.
You did. Many a good stream, many a good undefeated streak. And we all know this. Yes, Hans. It's his favorite game. There are no other video games for Hans but Pac-Man 99. But that was good seeing that. All right. So if we're going to jump into my proper games of the past top five, let's get going with number five.
Number five.
Alien Isolation. One of the games that we covered during Spooky Games Month turned out to be one of the most atmospheric, intense, nail-bitingly, palm-sweatingly awesome games I've ever played in my life. From the way they leaned into the retro-future aesthetic of the original Alien film, to the incredibly good stealth mechanics and the enemy AI that really kept me on my toes. I have never had as much fun with this kind of a game in recent memory, I gotta say. Alien Isolation just really hit me as something special. The only thing I'm bummed about is that I didn't get to this game sooner, but it's available on more platforms than ever at this point, I think, just due to its legacy and its reputation. And I think it's worth a shot. You know, we talked on our episode that it's worth checking out, and you should if you have not played it.
Yeah, the world of Alien Isolation is awesome. The fact that you just feel like you're in that late 70s, early 80s sci-fi atmosphere is great. While the game does run a little bit longer than it should or that it needs to, it's still great to be in that universe. So I applaud you on that one. It's actually, it was a good game, and it was one of the better games of our Spooky Games Month.
All right, Josh, hit me with that five.
Since you talked about a spooky game, I guess my number five is also going to be a spooky game, but it's not going to be as big as yours. Mine is called Little Nightmares. Little Nightmares was a game that I streamed earlier this year. I sat down one afternoon and played through it beginning to end. While it wasn't the best narrative style game that I've played, it was creepy. The art style was very unsettling, and there was a lot of tense moments in that game that I was like, it made me think about that game constantly of like, man, I've never seen anything like this, or this is just so disgustingly creepy, or just I feel so uneased and like unwelcomed in this world. And then I just, oh man, I mean, it was a very unique style game, very similar to, like, imagine if Limbo was a horror game.
I thought Limbo was a terrifying, horrifying game.
Well,
but okay, I get you. Yeah, that's really cool, though. That's really fascinating, especially because, like, all I really know of Little Nightmares is it kind of has, like, a little bit of a cute, not cute. I know its art style that I've seen is dark, but almost kind of like chibi horror or something. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
If it mines that kind of depths, even with that art style, that's pretty intriguing. So, all right. Thank you for sharing that. That's awesome.
Now we got to go to number four if we're counting down.
I am number four, a movie that doesn't exist. And my number four game from the past is The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time 3D.
Ooh.
Now, Ocarina of Time won our March Madness this year, and we covered it with special guest Patnat. And for that, I didn't even need to replay the game. I just jumped into the episode ready to go because I played that game so many times. But afterwards, based off of you and Pat talking about the gameplay improvements and quality of life improvements in the 3DS version, I was like, you know, that's been sitting on my shelf for like 5 years and I haven't touched it yet. So I gotta get into it. And damn, the 3DS version is the definitive version of that game to play because it's one of the perfect kind of remasters. You know, it only fixes the very small amount of things that are technically broke or problematic, and it leaves everything else go and just makes it a little bit prettier. And, you know, also I kind of decided to challenge myself through this playthrough to see about things I've heard about, over the years, that you can do some of the dungeons out of order. And I actually did do it for the first time in my life. I didn't just follow the scripted order of everything. And it felt like trying the adventure out in a whole new way. Because it's like, okay, I got to this dungeon earlier than I was supposed to. And I don't have all the key items, but I can still beat it. I just got to put my brain to the test and figure it out. So it was great. It was a great way to re-experience something that's been a childhood favorite. And it really just it re-cements how the core elements of that game are still really special. But like now with like you said, and as I just said, the quality of life improvements really take it to a whole other level. So Ocarina of Time, the 3DS, the way to play that game officially.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, that's what, you know, when me and Pat were talking about it, it's like, that's the best way to play. It was the only way that I was playing it, easily accessible at that time. And there is just so many great quality of life improvements to that game. So it's just chef's kiss.
Mm-hmm. All right, Josh, why don't you be fantastic and tell me your number four?
Well, my number four is also a number four. Resident Streets Evil. Of Rage 4, to be precise. Side-scrolling action beat 'em up game kind of picks up in the story right where a couple years after Streets of Rage 3. I loved this game. I went back to it numerous times after beating the game and finding out that I can unlock the sprite and 8-bit characters from the original games to play in this. Was awesome. Getting their move sets, their actions and stuff. Great story to it. Fantastic side scroll beat 'em up. I'm very excited that this game got this franchise got a breath of fresh air coming to it. Kudos. Great job on all fronts to Streets of Rage 4. This was a game that was recommended to me by 21st Century Fool a long while ago after we covered Streets of Rage 1 earlier this year.
My third favorite game from the past, and it is Psychonauts. Yes, for the first time in my life, I tried Psychonauts this year. A 3D platforming icon, you know, a cult favorite beloved by not just fans of the 3D platforming genre, but, you know, fans of Tim Schafer's work, fans of that kind of like early Xbox era. And I gotta say, it is just remarkably good. It has a really fun, kind of absurd and irreverent story, and this just fantastic art style that borders on like some kind of like Tim Burton or Invader Zim creepiness, but everyone still comes across as charming. It has an excellent difficulty curve, and there are three levels back to back to back in this game. They are some of the most creative and inventive and fun to play levels in any platforming game I've ever played across any console. You have, you go into the mind of a milkman with a government paranoia and kind of conspiracy theory minded like ideas, and you have to fight all these men in trench coats while disguising yourself and tricking them into giving you information. And then you go into the mind of a mental hospital worker who is like a great, great, great grandson of Napoleon. And inside his mind, he's playing a board game against Napoleon because he feels like he'll never be as good as him. And you have to become a character on the board game and help him win the game through challenges. And then you go into the mind of a woman who's a failed actress with bipolar disorder. And you have to, like, basically, it's a theater. And you have to, like, help the theater guide through this, like, fantastical story of her life and childhood while solving platforming puzzles, and like depending how you solve them changes the scene and changes the context of her life and everything. It's great. And like the final boss of that level is a theater critic who his weapons are two giant pen guns, and he fires like demeaning comments at you, like, you know, like, oh, too self-serious, or like you're a fraud and everything. And it's like, it's so creative and good, and I loved every second of that game. Psychonauts is out on a lot of platforms. It's truly something special, and I could just say play it. Like, absolutely play it. You'll enjoy it.
Okay.
Just a lot. It was a lot. It was,
yeah,
a
lot. You got really into that.
It was something really special. But I talked a lot. Josh, hit me with your number three.
So there has been games in the past that have clicked for me and my wife, producer Becca, games that we've been able to sit down and play and pass the controller back and forth to. Such games like Peggle, such games like, you know, we played Fortnite together, we played Mortal Kombat together, we play a lot of games together. However, this year, we discovered, thanks to Xbox Game Pass, the best deal in gaming, Dicey Dungeon. Oh boy, is that a game. It is Slay the Spire meets Yahtzee meets Dungeons and Dragons, and it is great. It constantly keeps going and giving. Not only have we completed that game 100%, but we completed that game twice on separate consoles. Producer Becca is upstairs playing it currently, right now, and I just got an achievement popped up on my computer because she's upstairs playing it. So great job at getting the three equipment uses in one turn. It is a fantastic game. The characters are lovely. The humor is so good. The music slaps. The music is from the same group that did the video game Just Shapes and Beats, which is a great game as well that I played this year, but we're not talking about that. I think everyone should sit down and play Dicey Dungeons. It is the best way to get into roguelike games without having to understand how it works. Number two, Tom.
Number two, we're getting there. The runner-up to the best of the best of the past. This is a game that you kept demanding that I play. You were like, did you play it yet? Are you going to play it? Here's the soundtrack. I'm in your car. Here's the soundtrack. Listen to the soundtrack from this game. Play it. Play it, Tom. Play it. And I was like, I finally did. And, you know, Josh, there have been very few times in my life as a gamer where a game has made me cry, just weep. And Sayonara Wild Hearts, I'm not kidding you, made me weep. It made me like weep of just like just this pure sincere emotion that game pulls you through. It's basically a long interactive music video. It's a rhythm-based game where you push your main character through all these action set pieces and exploration set pieces set to an incredible kind of pop synth electric album, and all the songs are absolute jams. And it's like the story of someone who has lost their spark and is trying to refind it. And in doing so, you go through some of the most amazing visuals I've seen in any medium. And I'm not kidding. Like, that's part of what made me just kind of like my eyes well up. I was just like, this is a beautiful game. I would recommend this to anybody who is looking just for some good music. It's a very light game. You can complete it in probably less than 2 hours. Mm-hmm. It literally is like the length of just like checking out an album. And it's worth coming back to because, you know, it's like how I said in that it's kind of rhythm based. You can come back to it to perfect it, to get better at it and still enjoy the music and the sights while you're doing it. Available across almost everything. Like, you know, at this point, I believe it's on the Switch. It's on the PlayStation 4. Is it on Xbox Game Pass, Josh?
Or it's not on Game Pass, but it's on Xbox.
Okay. I just own it because I think I bought this on like multiple things at this point. But yeah, truly an all timer of a game for me. Seriously.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it was in my list last year or 2 years ago when I played it originally. The way you talked about it is like playing it is a music video version of Enter the Spider-Verse is how I like imagine it. That art style, the graphics, just the way that everything is, you're moving to the music in the way that the music's supposed to be. There isn't a bad song in that entire game. And then the actual lyrical tracks that are in the game are some of the best music that I've heard in the past 10 years. That's probably like the number one listen to soundtrack on my Apple Music account, because that's all I listen to is that soundtrack. When I'm working out or running, I'm listening to that soundtrack because you just feel the energy behind it. And God, it's so good. And I highly recommend it. You guys could probably find it for like $5 to $10. It's worth more than that, I think. Even though it's a very short game, the experience that you get inside of it is definitely worth it. My silver medal was a game that I've always wanted to play, and I was waiting because it was out on PC exclusively, and then it was like, oh, it's going to come to consoles. It'll come to consoles. I'll get to it. And then it released on consoles, and then I got the limited run version of it. And this was a game that I didn't know what to expect from it, and that is The Return of the Obra Dinn. It's a game that looks like it's a 3D, I can't even say walking simulator, because that's not really what it is. Like, it's more of a detective story, but the graphical style to it makes it look like it's a Game Boy. Like, that, it's so awesome. It's a first-person detective simulator where you are on a pirate boat, and you have to find out what happened to all of the people on this pirate ship. There's 60 to 80 people on this pirate ship, and they all disappeared. The boat disappeared out at sea, and then it just came back, and nobody's on it. So as you go through, you uncover memories of this, and it shows you all of the things that have happened on the boat. in the past, and like you're jumping between the current day and back and what happened on the boat. And it's everything from like killer mermaids were on the boat to a giant kraken was there, and like there's so many different things that happened. And then like it all stems back to how did this actually happen, which is, I'm not going to spoil for you here. I highly recommend playing
scurvy,
through,
right?
I highly recommend playing through though to see just how crazy and how amazing of a narrative this game was, because I was like, oh, like this just okay, so the captain went crazy and he shot this guy and then they all turned against the captain and stuff like that. And then there's a part where I go into the pass and I turn around and there's a giant ass kraken right above me. I'm like, holy shit, what the hell did I just do? Like, it just freaked, like I freaked out. And it was an amazing experience. It was one of those games, like when I was done with it, I'm like, I couldn't stop thinking about that story. And, you know, back in the day, people talked about how amazing it was. I think back in 2018 when it came out. And it is, it was a great, great narrative.
Terrific. That's terrific. Glad to hear. It's always been something that I've kind of had my eye on, is like, oh, this is kind of like a unique looking game. Maybe I should check it out. But hearing that from you, I guess I'm going to have to try it now. And then next year I'll be telling you about how I wept during it. So watch out. That's the new Sayonara Wild Hearts in my life. My number one is a little independent 2018, you know, title, kind of a mom and pop game. I don't know if you've heard of it's called God of War.
Oh, right. That's a dad and son. That's a dad and pop, but it's a pop and son game.
It's called A God and His Boy. Yes. No, God of War 2018 was the first game that I played on my PlayStation 5 after I got it. And I only had a kind of mild familiarity with the God of War franchise. I played the first one on the PS2 way back in the day, and then I kind of, you know, fell off of it. But this entry was so seamless in that kind of like, it brings you into this world and it gives you just enough of references or even just hints of lore that happened. And it throws you into this really compelling, really satisfying adventure where all the main characters are like super well drawn. Like, these are some of the most just like interesting and well-written characters in gaming history. And the way that the entire story plays out through the seamless cutscene to gameplay transitions was terrific. They did a really good job of, you know, utilizing their gimmick of the whole thing as a one shot almost movie, so much so that I produced a video talking about its cinematography and all its influences and all of its techniques, because I was just so impressed and so taken with this game. Combat's really good. I had a lot of fun like learning the combos and customizing my weapons and stuff, and it always felt satisfying to get into fights. I never wanted to run away from a fight. You know, I was like, oh, cool, let's do this. Puzzles were really good. I felt like, you know, the way they used the environments or the way that they kind of set up things that made you think outside the box, really good. Just everything about it. Like, this is probably one of the most just impressive AAA games I have played in recent memory. And I'm very excited for the sequel coming next year. And I'm very excited to at one point go back and just replay it again, just to like see everything. But it hits all the emotional notes. It hits all the adrenaline notes with its action, and it ties it all together in this just perfect, beautiful knot. And as our good friend RK7's mentioning in the chat, it comes out on PC January 14th, which means a whole new generation of gamers are going to get to play it. And then they will hilariously mod it, and I will get tons of laughs out of the ridiculous material of like Kratos fighting Thomas the Tank Engine or mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah. I played this game a couple years ago, and I really enjoyed it. And say what you will about the God of War franchise, this was a fantastic game. Narrative, it's an amazing, amazing story. Gameplay is super fun, and it changes, and it's, you know, it gave us that one shot, right? Hidden load screens behind sliding between very thin walls, but it gave us the one shot. And I think overall, there's a great choice for a number one game. And yeah, I don't have anything bad to say about that. Yes. So this was a game that not many games break me emotionally. Not many games do I want to sit down, or when I'm done, I want to get up and just talk to everybody about, to be able to explain my experience that I've had with a game. I don't have that much or that often. But I took advice and I sat down one-on-one with Doki Doki Literature Club. And Doki Doki Literature Club is an amazing narrative game that broke, I don't even know what, the seventh, eighth wall? I have no idea how it did this. You can watch a full playthrough or a condensed playthrough over on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/castofthepast, where you'll be able to see me slowly start to lose my mind as the game has pretty much become self-aware at times. But I don't want to spoil anything because I do want you guys to experience it for the first time. But the fact that you're able to actually see what I went through, my thought process, where I thought the story was going and where it ended up going. And when I was done, I sat there and I just was like, who has played this game? I need to talk to somebody right now. Like, and I ran. I was like, I need to. And to find out that everybody has their different favorite girl, everybody has the different way that they want the story to go, everyone has all these particular beats in this game, and the soundtrack, oh my god, the soundtrack is so damn good, and I didn't even expect that to come out of anywhere. And I'm constantly listening to that soundtrack right now. You know, we talked about Sayonara Wild Hearts. Now we're talking about Doki Doki Literature Club. And for Christmas, Santa Claus got me Doki Doki Literature Club Plus on the PlayStation 5, which comes with 6 more additional stories. So damn. I have no idea what I'm going to do. But I think, yes, for games of not this year, Doki Doki Literature Club gets my number one pick of a game that I should have played a really long ass time ago. Because it's one of those games, it's not my cup of tea. I'm not one of those visual novel people, but damn, did this thing break me.
That is so cool to hear. I hope Discord Ambassador AJ gets to find out about that choice. I know they were very happy when you played that game.
Now we're going over to some one-off awards that we have. These were some of the ones that we've just talked about over, you know, what are some of the best games of these particular sub-genres or whatnot, right? We talk about best narrative, best games from a particular console, best multiplayer, so on and so on and so on. So we're going to dive in. What one do you want to do first, Tom?
Well, yeah, we're going to put Jeff Keighley out of business. This is the Real Game Awards. And let's start with the exclusives. Let's kick it off with best PlayStation exclusive game of the year. Josh, what's going to pick things up?
The best
on the PlayStation.
The best Sony game of 2021, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart. I think that showed what the console can do, what the console is going to, you know, proceed out into the future, how far action platformers are going to be going. It's a great sequel to the 2016 remake that we talked about earlier in our podcasting life. But I think Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart is the best Sony game.
Okay, well, I can only give this award to the only PlayStation exclusive game that I played in 2021. And that is Destruction All-Stars.
Oh my god!
Before the show, Josh ran down all the exclusive Sony games that came out this year, and he didn't say that. And I was like, oh, well, no, I know what it is. He was like, what? Like, he was legit confused.
Because, oh my god. Tom, you said this was going to be the multiplayer game of the year.
It should have been on paper. So here's the thing. Here, I will say, not sarcastically, I do like, I think the gameplay mechanics and ideas behind this game were really fun. It's basically Rocket League with Overwatch style heroes, you know, and there was a lot of potential to it. The biggest problem is that this game launched with a bare bone amount of modes, an unbalanced character roster, and they locked story content behind individually purchasable paywalls. Like, not pay a fee to get the story mode. It's, do you want to get this character's story mode? It's 1,000 credit. But this game has already died a death. This game doesn't exist. despite the fact that at one point it was going to be a $70 physical release PlayStation 5 exclusive, and then they just dumped it on PS Plus. So that's all I got. That's the best PlayStation exclusive of the year, because it's the only one I played.
Let's go to their direct competitor, Tom.
PC?
No, good. Well, technically, good old Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Microsoft and the best Xbox game of 2021. I'm going to let you go first on this one. I have a feeling I know what you're going to say, so I'll let you go first.
I think the best Xbox exclusive game of the year is Sable. The way I pitched it to Josh, imagine if Journey and Breath of the Wild had a baby. You are out in this futuristic kind of like post-apocalyptic world that's mostly desert, but there's kind of like lush jungles and like a cold, harsh Arctic. And you play this young woman who's on a kind of coming of age quest from her tribe. You like start the game by building a hover bike, like little swoop bike from Star Wars almost. And your quest is go out into the world and figure out who you are and come back to the tribe when you're ready to like be a full member, and then the game's over. And you can play the game as long as you want. The kind of objective markers is like you're collecting pieces that you use to build masks, and the masks are like trades. Like you can be a scrapper, you can be a merchant, you can be
cartographer?
A cartographer's mask.
Yeah. I only know that word from Halo 1, so don't think that I'm super smart, guys.
But yeah, but this is a indie game developed by a team, I think, of like less than 15 people, and they made a world almost as big and just as endlessly explorable as Breath of the Wild was. And it's got a banger of a soundtrack, it's got a unique art style, and it's just gorgeous. It's something to really get lost in. And maybe this will sound like a turnoff to some, but there's no combat in it. It's that's where I say, like, it's kind of like Journey. It's just puzzle solving and exploration set to this really mellow soundtrack. Like, this just nice vibe. So really good game. It's on Xbox Game Pass, the best deal in gaming. And that's the best Xbox exclusive game of the year.
So you're wrong. Because I've noticed something in our Twitch chat. A lot of people, when you were talking about Destruction All-Stars, they were saying F, F, F. And I think that they were all getting ready to spell out Forza Horizon 5. Forza Horizon 5 was such a great game. I hate racing games. I hate open world games. This is a racing open world game, and I had so much fun in that world. That game was beautiful. Just crazy that world was. It was so good. That was like the first big release like that came to Game Pass, right? It was Forza Horizon 5, day one, launched on Game Pass. It was something that I never expected to enjoy. So when I was done with it, I was like, you know what? When I stopped that stream, I was like, I'm going to keep playing. And I did. I kept playing. I went back to this game on my own free will. And that means a lot when it comes to a racing game, when it comes to a Forza game, when it comes to all this kind of stuff. Because I'm not one of those people that get, I got to see what color spark plugs are going to be inside my vehicle. How many different colored rims am I going to have on the spare tire of the Jeep that I have and whatnot. But no, Forza Horizon 5, I highly recommend it. It was the best Xbox game of 2021. While we talked about Sony and we talked about Xbox, let's talk about the group that's sitting over in the corner eating glue. Ladies and gentlemen, Nintendo is back.
As you said, arguably the most console exclusives this year.
Yeah, yeah. The best Nintendo game of 2021.
Well, what is it, Josh? What did the big N give to the big J?
I give it to Metroid Dread. I have some things to say about Metroid Dread, but the fact that it took so long for us to get a great Metroid game, an amazing 2D Metroidvania that may be a little dated right now, just shows what this franchise can do in the future. And I'm excited. There was a lot of times playing the game that I did have a smile on my face. There was a lot, like the whole end of that game was very similar to like Mario Odyssey, when you turn into Bowser at the end. And like, I had a smile on my face that whole time. At the end of Metroid Dread, when a particular thing happens, I had a big smile on my face throughout the entire end of that game. It was crazy. And yes, I did call Metroid a Metroidvania because it's just the genre that that game is. No, but I gave it to Metroid Dread. I think out of all the Nintendo exclusives, this is the one that I was most looking forward to. And it didn't disappoint completely. You know what I mean? Like, we all have things that we don't like about stuff, right? I tend to have a lot of things that I don't like about everything.
Josh doesn't like something? What?
What? Oh my God, that's crazy. But no, I give it to Metroid Dread. I think this was the resurgence that this franchise needed.
Mine is, it's also Dread, because of the very few Nintendo exclusives that I experienced this year, it's the most polished, it was the most in-depth, and, you know, one of the more interesting experiences, not just from the Metroid franchises, but recent Nintendo games. It's really interesting, the review I wrote for it on Backlogged, it felt weird because we're in this era where the Metroidvania genre has exploded through indie games to such great heights with stuff like Hollow Knight and Guacamelee and Bloodstained Circle of the Moon, that it's just kind of like Metroid, the originator, shows up and it's like somebody coming back to their high school and it's like, hey, I used to be the hotshot around here.
Yeah.
And they're like, ew, you're old. But, you know, you could see parts of Dread emulating elements of other games, from, you know, the examples I just mentioned to many more. And it was interesting to see how they adapted and what Metroid did with those choices to make it very interesting. I liked about it the most, Josh, I'll just say, the reason why it left a good impression with me is because there was just a lot of moments where exploring the map led me to kind of find things I didn't realize what I was looking for. You know, like I got stuck on a boss and I was like, all right, I'm going to just walk around. And I ended up finding a complete path that I wasn't even thinking to look for. And I got, I think, the Varia suit, a little early, because they give you that freedom. And it was so good. It was so good just in that. So Dread, that's my Nintendo exclusive of the year.
You know, RK says it in the chat here, Metroid Dread, the game voted most to be outshined by indie games of the same type. 100% true. And that's one of the biggest gripes that I've had about this game, is that the master has kind of become the apprentice now, where all of these games that it pretty much gave that style of gameplay too, right? Like, everyone's like, oh, well, I want to make a game like Metroid. Oh, I want to make a game like this, and so on. Like, now all those games are outshining the grandfather of that genre. And it's great to see, because competition breeds excellence. So
Metroid Dread has been okay boomered by Hollow Knight.
Let's go to the best soundtrack of 2021.
It's going to Sable, the game that I just mentioned is my favorite Xbox game, and it's soundtrack by the band Japanese Breakfast. So this is,
I've heard about them from somewhere else.
I had never heard of them. My fiance had, she was telling me like, oh yeah, like they've had a pretty good career. They're an American indie rock band, and it is just so pleasant and so just engrossing, the way it's kind of like, you know, it's got that kind of ambient score style that Breath of the Wild had, but this is kind of a lot more of like electronic synth pop. I use that to describe Sayonara, but it's not too far off from it. And the way it changes between the night and day cycle, or the way it changes between going into areas, you know, I mean, it's not the first game where, like, you know, the soundtrack bleeds into a different tempo or anything, but it really adds to just the mood of exploring. And yeah, this game soundtrack is just kind of like, man, it's like you're always on the cool side of the pillow anytime you're playing it.
You okay. Know?
You're just
okay.
Like, oh man. So yeah, Sable, best soundtrack of 2021. Really dug it. Josh, hit me up with your choice.
The Artful Escape. This soundtrack was so good. It just felt like, do you know, like when you're listening to music and you close your eyes and you kind of just swing back and forth to it, you know what I mean? Just like you're feeling the music, you're living in that moment and stuff like that. That's what The Artful Escape really was. From the actual lyrical tracks that are in the game by Johnson Vendetti, which Santa Claus bought me the LP of Johnson Vendetti from the game for Christmas. So I actually have the Johnson Vendetti album that they talk about in the game physically now. Those songs are fantastic. But when you unlock the ability to carry a guitar around, you can hold your trigger button down and your character is playing a guitar solo for the entire time. That means that somebody recorded hours and hours of guitar solos for your character to play that just bleeds perfectly into it, right? The fact that you can just walk around and that fills in the world. It brings life back to these planets. It shows and goes through and just, it's just visually stunning. And that the music fits so well with what you're seeing, with how crazy of all the stuff that you're seeing, that music just works for that world and for that atmosphere, that I have to give it to The Artful Escape.
All right, Josh, what one-off awards do we have left?
We have the best multiplayer of 2021. We're going back 20 years. We're talking
it's a bad year.
About well, no, a little back in November of 2001. We had a game, a first-person shooter came out and took the world by storm. 20 years later, when we all thought arena shooters were dead, Halo Infinite kicks open the door again and says, I'm back. Ladies and gentlemen, Halo's back. Halo Infinite.
I'm back.
Halo Infinite's multiplayer gets my award for the best multiplayer of 2021. I just, the things that they've changed to that game, just the feeling that it feels like Halo. Like it's not Halo 5, it's not Halo 4. Like it feels like Halo 3. It feels like the game that we know from our past. And this is nostalgic first-person shooting multiplayer gaming at its finest.
You know that I am having a blast with Halo multiplayer, and I'm not somebody who has the background with Halo, and yet I'm up to level 89 on the Battle Pass. I'm probably going to complete it. I'm probably going to complete it within this week. It is so god dang fun. I find myself watching competitive streams to like figure out better play styles and stuff. Like that's how much this game has sucked me in. And yeah, like Lizreal mentioning Halo basically got usurped by Call of Duty once Modern Warfare came out. How hilarious is it that in a year where we have a Call of Duty and a Battlefield, Halo came out and just buried both of them. No one cares about, I think very few people care about those games, and those people can't even actually play them because of how buggy they are.
Yeah. And Arcane chat saying, I'm mad about the small playlist that we started with. Yes. I mean, this is the first entry of what we're going to be getting. They've already said all of the changes that they're going to be making. They're going to have Slayer only modes. They're going to have Oddball only modes. They're going to have differences in ranking and experience point getting. Yes. Welcome back, Halo. Welcome back,
They've been very receptive. Yeah. They've been very receptive to, you know, the feedback of the community.
Are you saying that they're listening to their fans?
Oh my God. Who ever heard? But yeah, Josh, Free for All Slayer, that's currently up. SWAT, that's currently up. Like, Those are the things I know you wanted the most, and they're ready to go.
We got one more. Sorry. Oh, we got one more best before we get into the not so best.
Oh.
The best narrative of 2021.
This is going to go to Eidos Montreal's Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. I know there was a lot of hesitation around that game, especially for me. When I saw it, I was like, well, you know, Square Enix has kind of already dropped the ball with Avengers. How are they going to pick up the pieces? And Guardians, man, its story is so good. And it's through the kind of branching path dialogue system and choice systems you can make. You know, this game has a skeleton, you know, it has a path. And it has major points, but you could take different roads to get there. And the road I took had a lot of interesting character conflict, a lot of interesting drama, and like good comedic stakes and everything. But even when it got to the high points, like those emotional points of characters dealing with like loss and getting older and, you know, friendships ending or stuff like that, or just, you know, the literal stakes of the galaxy ending, it was always really good and really exciting. And I don't New Game Plus games borderline ever, but I am so excited. In the coming weeks, I'm going to do it. I'm going to New Game Plus and pick all the paths I didn't do.
So my pick, this is going to be a hard one for me because I didn't play a lot of big narrative based games this year. But I've watched portions of some games, and there's been ones that have intrigued me tremendously that it encouraged me to go out and buy the game so I could try to experience the rest of it myself. That's going to be going to Life is Strange: True Colors.
Oh, nice.
I think there is a great, compelling mystery inside this game. From what I've seen of it in streams, what I've seen of it on, you know, YouTube and stuff like that, I have been extremely intrigued with this. I loved the first Life is Strange. I have not played the second one, but this one's the one that's going to probably bring me back into it. Once again, I got this game just recently for the PlayStation 5. I'm going to be jumping into it, maybe doing it on stream with you guys. Maybe we'll see. The story that I've seen of it is so compelling that it encouraged me to go out and get the game. So I'm going to give it to Life is Strange: True Colors. Because when you have a story so compelling that it encourages you to go out and spend $70, that's a good start. You're doing something right. But now we are done talking about the best. Let's talk about everyone's favorite, the worst game of 2021.
Josh, what is your worst game of 2021?
12 Minutes.
It's both of our worst games of 2021.
I played it. I played it after your stream.
Okay, I didn't know you played it. I thought, yeah. Okay, tell me, because I've gone off at length, but tell me.
It's not good. It's buggy. It's not even, I can't even say it's buggy. It's more frustrating to control. And this is a year that Balan Wonderworld came out.
Balan Wonderworld.
And Tom, I'm going to let you know right now, I have Balan Wonderworld upstairs for the PlayStation 5.
You got it for Christmas. Merry Christmas.
I asked Santa for it. I was like, I need to know.
Santa's like, oh, what is wrong with this boy?
There was so much potential for 12 Minutes to be an amazing game. And it just was a fart in a grocery bag that was just stuffed around your head.
This is gaming this year's equivalent of, you know, every once in a while, at least once a year, we get a bloated piece of Oscar bait in the movie release calendar where it's like a stacked cast and a deep, you know, like topic that'll really bend your mind. And you see the movie and it's like, this is so up its own ass. And so with it has nothing to say. And that's like, I was on the hype train. I was like, wow, like a mainstream.
You drank that Kool-Aid.
I did. A cast of like mainstream actors of big pedigrees, an interesting concept. And in the end, I still from time to time, I'll watch Yahtzee's zero punctuation reviews. And the way he summarized the ending, he did like a no spoiler review. And the way he said, he goes, basically, at the end of this game, you find out the main character is a dog molester. And, you know, no matter what ending you get, it's kind of like, well, there is no good or bad ending because no matter how it ends, I'm still a dog molester at the end of the day. And that's not what the main twist is. I won't spoil it for anyone who wants to play this trash, but it's one of the grossest kind of story concepts that has no thematic weight and nothing to say. It's just gross.
There was
and
no
shocking.
Yeah, there was no like payoff for anything.
Yeah, it's just, oh, I have a gross secret and I did some messed up stuff, and the game, the shocking finale of the game is like, maybe don't like the stuff you like. And it's like, well, you know, it's like, thanks game for putting me through all of this for that. Like, it's so bad. It's so bad.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's head over to the reason that we're all here. And that's the best games of 2021.
Yes, our top five favorite games from this year, or in some specific occasions, you know, games that blew up this year in a way that we were kind of like, it counts. It counts.
Yeah. You know, it's like the participation trophy type thing. You know what I mean? It's like, you know what? You showed up this year. You're good.
There you go. So, Josh, you let me kick off the games of the past. I would like you to kick off the games of the present. Tell me your number five from 2021.
Number five from 2021, a game that I already talked about, The Artful Escape. While it wasn't a super long game, it was a very enjoyable narrative. And it was a story of like, you don't need to be who everyone wants you to be. You can be yourself. And if people don't like it, who cares? You're your own person. And that's pretty much what the whole game was set out to be. A wonderful cast of characters, amazing soundtrack, which we've talked about previously. Overall, I highly recommend The Artful Escape, which is available on Xbox Game Pass, the best deal
the
in gaming.
The best deal in gaming. Okay. Very good choice, Josh. Glad to see that on your list. My number five. My five-time game of the year. Oh, I'm lying. I have an honorable mention. an honorable mention I want to talk about before my number five is a game I didn't put on the list because I felt a little weird about it. But it's a little nugget from Nintendo called Bowser's Fury. Now, it's an add-on to the re-release of Super Mario 3D World, but it's beefy. It's not just like a couple slapdash things. It's almost a standalone game, but it's what this game represents for the potential of Mario's future. It's 3D platforming in a seamless, huge open map. As Donkey described it in his video on the game, he's like, you want to play a Mario level? You go to that level and you play that Mario level. Like, and it's just seamless. There is no more hub world. There's just the world. And it's really interesting how quickly you talked about hidden loading screens in God. When I mentioned God of War, like how they, you know, you have like an entire wintry tower and you can climb to a big section of it and get the cat shine. And then as soon as you hit the bottom, the tower kind of refreshes out of your eye level and the next puzzle's ready and you can just jump up it. But it was really interesting, the mechanic where you turn into Super Saiyan giant Mario lion god and fight dark goo Bowser was fun, but it wasn't my favorite part of the game. But, it, you know, if this is something that's going to represent where Mario might go, I'm going to be really interested to see. Being able to have an inventory of Mario items so you can... Well, my number five is Halo Infinite's multiplayer.
Okay.
Everything positive that I've already said about it still holds up. I haven't played Halo Infinite's campaign. You told me I shouldn't because I'm five games behind. But man, it's a blast. It's yeah. So much fun. I'm probably going to play it after this.
Yeah.
But that's nice. My number five.
Nice. Number four is going to shock a lot of you. And I think a lot of games on my list might shock people. Resident Evil 8.
Holy shit!
This has like an asterisk next to it. Because the first 75% of this game is super enjoyable. the last bit of it, just like a lot of the games like this have gone ahead and it stumbled pretty bad towards the end. But the opening segments all the way up to maybe halfway through the water area of the game were super enjoyable. It was nail-biting. It was creepy. It was horror. There was a lot of good stuff inside that game. And I think, you know, we talk about Lady D, right? We talk about Big Vampire Mama, right? She's great. The daughters were amazing as well. The dollhouse was still probably one of the creepiest and scariest things that we've had to experience in gaming in recent memory. That baby was horrifying. The screams, the yells, I have goosebumps talking about it. The dollhouse is worth the price of admission to that game right there. And yes, I'm going to give Resident Evil 8 number 4. I missed sexy. Yes. I'm going to give Resident Evil 8 number 4 on my list.
My number 4, I've already gushed about a lot, but it is Guardians of the Galaxy. Guardians of the Galaxy likely would have been higher on this list, but as RK11 mentioned, I just gotta get out of the way some negatives that I didn't bring up when I was previously talking about it. This was, despite how good it was, this was a bit of a buggy mess. Certain textures not loading, characters getting stuck on environments. This is the first PlayStation 5 game I've had outright crash on me. It has a lot of the, you know, release day bloat that a lot of AAA games have. And I just want to say it's a testament to how good its story is and how good its choice options play out that I was like, okay, I'll keep going. I will push through this because this is winning me over. And it did win me over, and they have, you know, subsequently patched it a bit, but I'm just tired of this, you know, like, oh, release it unfinished and we'll patch it out and consumers can just deal with it. That sucks, but the game's really good, worth playing. Whatever console you can get it on, I would say it's definitely worth getting into.
Knock, knock, Tom.
Who's there?
Death's door's calling.
Death Doors Calling Who?
No, that's the end of the joke. Ladies and gentlemen, number 3 is Death's Door, a indie game that a lot of people were excited for. You play a little crow with a sword who is going to kill people for death. A little crow like Grim Reaper in the style of an isometric Dark Souls Zelda inspired game. The characters are great. The world is fun and just adorable and gloomy. And it's so, I don't know how to describe how, any way else to describe that game, because it's sad, but I don't know. I'm enjoying it. I think it is a great game. I think that it is a fantastic, like I said, Souls-like, Zelda-inspired game. And, you know, we talk about Metroid Dread, how it has paved the way for a lot of games. Some of these games have paved the way so Death's Door can be out there. And Death's Door is on a lot of people's Game of the Year rankings. I think the villains, the characters, the story, all of that is A1. So Death's Door, number 3, loving it.
How many lobsters do you fight in the game?
I'm not at liberty to tell.
Well, we all know that lobsters and crows are, you know, what are
sworn enemies. Yes.
Sworn enemies. Yes. Yes. So I'm just curious. Okay.
Tom, number 3.
Number 3 is Sable. Again, it's just remarkable that an indie team managed to put together a game that's almost the size of Breath of the Wild. It is beautiful. It is interesting to explore. And I had a lot of fun with it. It's definitely my indie game of the year. And look, Sable's really that good. I'll strike it a little bit for having some collision detection bugs, I would say. Some things like once in a while I would get stuck in an environment. But like, you just 30 minutes, did you at least get out of the initial like kind of tribal area? if you go through the gate and then just explore, there are a lot of interesting things. Like, you find a city where someone has disabled all their power generators, and you kind of gonna like solve a little mystery of like what happened and who did this, you know, things like that. You find crashed spaceships from whatever humans landed on this planet, and you're kind of piecing together the backstory of how, you know, humanity left Earth and got to this planet. There's a lot to kind of go and find. And it's on Game Pass, the best deal in gaming. So you can play it on your PC. You can play it on your Xbox, on your phone. Sable, the love child of Journey and Breath of the Wild. Please check it out.
Do you know how crazy it is in 2021 to find a game a couple days before Christmas and it make number two on your list?
You like Deathloop that much, huh?
Oh, no, I did not. Loop Hero, a game that I never thought I was going to enjoy. I saw a lot of gameplay footage to it, and I was like, this is not a game for me. I am not a roguelike fan, right? And we talk about having Dicey Dungeons on this list. We talk about now having Loop Hero on this list. Loop Hero, such a great game. You are a hero on a path, and all you need to do is build the world around this path, and it will regenerate your health, give you better items, have different enemies spawn in. You put different things next to other things, you'll have even harder enemies appear. And it's building this whole big world, and there's different chapters to it. But then when you get these resources, you go back to your village. And then when you're back in your village, you go ahead and can expand out. And expanding out will unlock new classes, will also unlock different cards that you're able to use. So not only is it this generated path, but it's also a card game mixed in with it too. So these cards that you get will let you put out what you're seeing. So like, it'll let you put out more enemies, it'll let you put out more trees so you can get health, it'll let you put out mountains so you can get these bigger enemies appear and stuff like that. And or you can go in and it'll say, hey, we have potions now, so every time you make a lap around, you'll get more potions that you'll be able to use inside your thing so you don't die in the middle of your run. Loop Hero is a game that just, I don't, it just clicked. It was free on the Epic Games Store a couple weeks ago, or a couple days ago. I picked it up, I played the crap out of it, and today it's on sale on the eShop, so I bought it today, and I've been playing it nonstop on my Switch OLED, and it is amazing. It is great. It's a game that I just can't stop thinking about. I can't put it down.
My number two is a game that we already talked about, so I'll keep this brief. It's Metroid Dread. Good game. Good game. I did not dread playing this game. Well, that just leaves us with the number one, Josh. The number one.
It's a game that I haven't talked about. A game that I've defended so much this year. A game that I played and it was, 2 o'clock in the morning, me and Dr. Lover in the middle of this game, screaming, cursing at this game, experiencing this world, and then seeing the 100% true ending of this game to have it unlock and see what this actually was.
Wow, Ballin' Wonderworld was that good, huh?
My number one favorite game of 2021, Returnal. Returnal is the best game I have played this year. It is the game that introduced me into the idea of roguelike games. And yes, like I just said, Loop Hero, Dicey Dungeons, Returnal. I could not believe how much I enjoyed that game. I remember us watching and doing live reacts of the PlayStation events, and I said, I don't like this game. I don't like the way that this game looks. I don't understand what they're trying to do. And then right before the game came out, they released another trailer of, this is what the game actually is. And I was like, I'm sold. It was a day one buy, and I played it nonstop. You guys argued and freaked out about an autosave feature that didn't matter at all in this goddamn game, and I defended it to the day. And now it has an autosave feature, so everyone can shut the hell up and just buy a PlayStation 5 and buy this game and be able to play it, because PlayStation 5s are easy to get. There's one right there. but Returnal is the best game of 2021. And if you can't play it, I'm sorry, but you're missing out on something great. Tom, tell me, talk to me about Psychonauts 2.
Hey. How dare you announce what my game of the year is before I get to announce it? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Psychonauts 2 is back.
Yes, it's been at least 15 minutes since Tom talked about it last.
Oh my god, no, for real.
Yeah.
Psychonauts 2 feels like it came from an alternate timeline where quality 3D platformers did not stop being made. And it is incredible how seamless it is. Like, you know, Nintendo basically has been the only company keeping this kind of gameplay alive. And then here comes Double Fine Entertainment being like, no, we got it. And some of the stuff they do with like the new zip mechanics where you can bounce between points is so instantaneous and fun. And again, I go back to talking about some of the most unique locations in gaming history. The opening level of this game takes place in like this corporate office inside the brain of a dentist. And the more you explore it, the more the walls turn and furniture turn into like gums with like teeth pop, like that like pop out of them. It's a little unsettling, but it's just like, I'm just like, how did this get made? And how does it look so freakish, but yet amazing? There's a game where you're helping a depressed alcoholic by floating to islands in his brain and popping open messages in bottles, i.e. like alcohol bottles. Every time you go into one of these messages, it's an element from his past life. And it's so like interesting to explore, but also like, you know, like sad in, you know, a kind of wholesome-ish way where it's like you're helping all these people. And it's, you know, it's a game that has a really well-written script that, you know, it doesn't just treat mental health as, you know, like a prop to hang gameplay on. The gameplay and the story all have like interesting things to say about the characters and their struggles and what they're going through. And it all caps off with this like surprise villain reveal that you don't see coming at all. And it's just, oh, it's so effective. It's so good. And I can only hope that this like pushes through that like genre, like this genre deserves to be revived and explored in like a really in-depth way. It's so good.
Do you have to play the first one to jump into this?
They do have this little animated kind of like, it's like the main character's scrapbook where he like talks about his adventures from the first one. I think it does a decent enough job of summarizing, but like the gimmick is that this game takes place 2 days after the first one. So it might help to play the original. I'll just say that.
Okay.
But I can help fill in the gaps for you if you'd be interested.
Okay.
It's on Xbox Game Pass because it's Microsoft Game Studios bought Double Fine. They still had to release it on PlayStation because of a contract thing, but that's why I was almost about to make it my best Xbox exclusive.
Yeah.
But yeah, creativity, good gameplay, good story. It's my game of the year.
So you heard it here. Not only is it Returnal, but it is Returnal and Psychonauts 2. But Tom, we put out in our Discord. We sent out a nice little bat signal of what do you guys think was the best game of 2021? And what were some...
For the first time ever.
Yeah, yes, what were some of the results that we had from that?
Yes, well, so this is the Discord Choice Award. And, well, what we were going to do is, you know, we were like, whatever game gets mentioned the most, we'll get, you know, the Discord Choice Game of the Year. RK11 mentioning there's some delay. Sorry about that. But we didn't have a consensus. We had a pretty evenly spread collection of games. I'll read some of the feedback we've got here from producer Becca. Resident Evil 8. I didn't personally play any 2021 releases, but I hung out with Josh for all of this one. While the second half of the game was okay, the first half was precisely what I feel a Resident Evil game is. Spooky, gross, creepy, and as she mentioned in the chat, sexy. So just throw that out there. Jake from Welcome to Game Corp nominated Metroid Dread. Very few 2021 releases wowed me, but Dread got it right on all fronts. It's creative, pretty, and fun to play. Resident Evil 8 would have won if it was just 30 hours of running away from the sexy giant vampires. I'm a simple man. Nothing wrong with that, Jake. Nothing wrong. Josh, do you have the next one? Do you want to read?
I can't go into Discord right now because of you being on the thing. You wouldn't be.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to read the next. I'll just read the next two then.
Okay.
So we have Noodle. For me, it was Death's Door. Scratched my itch for a top-down Zelda. The bosses were challenging but fair. Combat felt good. I loved the simple art style, the cute burbs, but they are Grim Reapers. And how could you upgrade your speed, power, rolls, and the selection of weapons? Backtracking to older areas with new abilities was encouraged, which I loved. I wish it had a map, but I didn't get lost that much. Dancing Beetle nominated Road 96, an amazing story-driven game that kept me hooked all the way through. It has a great cast of characters you meet through random events that are really engaging. And, oh, just down to the wire, we have RK-Slevin nominating Hades, technically came out this year, so let's go Hades because of how amazing it is. Roguelikes for life. But thank you to everybody who participated in the Discord choice. We will be doing it again next year, and hopefully we'll have an actual winner. But yep. Those are all winners in our book.
Hey, we all won because video games are cool.
Yeah.
But
take that, football players from high school.
We are finishing up here the best games of 2021, but we got some announcements here that we're going to be talking about on the future of Cast of the Past.
Ooh, yes.
What's happening in 2022?
All right. Well, after this episode gets posted to YouTube and the podcast streams, we are going to take a little bit of a between season break. This will end what unofficially has been season 5 of the show. And we are not going to have podcast episodes through January or February. Now, Josh and I will be streaming, but we're going to do a little bit of a change to the podcast. We are going to go on a format where we do one supersized episode a month. And we're hoping to use that kind of format to pick a game, dive into its legacy, but also kind of look at the ripple effects it's had in history. Should we just tell them what the first game back is? Because I feel like it's appropriate.
Yeah.
Tell them, Josh.
I don't remember.
Oh.
Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, when we come back in March, when we come back in March, we're going to be doing Breath of the Wild, but we're going to be talking about how it's 5 years into the lifespan of the Switch. You know, how much did Breath of the Wild drive the success of this console? What other games came out in the first year of the Switch? And, you know, now that they're this far out, what games have mimicked Breath of the Wild, you know, in trying to, you know, be more like it? We've seen a lot of games come out. So, yeah, basically that's going to kind of be a little bit of a taste of what the format is. We want to kind of focus on a game, but be more encompassing with its legacy. And we think one supersized episode a month will let us do that. And we're also going to go back to video episodes. The YouTube channel will be getting these supersized episodes.
Yep. We can also have special guests appear on these episodes. We've had guests like Tio. We've had guests like Mr. Lemon Boss. We had guests like Pat Nat join us in. We had Welcome to Game Corp / Head to Head in an episode with us before. So we will go ahead and we will open the gates to any of the pod family who want to talk about video games with Absolutely. Us. So it's been a hell of a year.
It has.
So ladies and gentlemen, that is all the time that we can spend in 2021. This has been Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And we will see you in the future. While we boot up the Triflex capacitor, please take some time to subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you listen. The show is nothing without you, and any support helps.
If you want to connect with us and discuss the past, present, and future of gaming, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
We also have a Twitch channel where we play games for the show and for fun, so come chat with us anytime.
Thanks again for listening,
and we'll see you in the future.